This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 21st of May 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 21st of May, which this week have been edited by Keith and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Norma York.
Hello.
And Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: 1/8 of district suffers from depression, radical ideas for the city park, and royal unveiling for the military site. So, Norma, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Yes. 1/8 of district suffers from depression. Around 1 in 8 people across Winchester suffers from depression, and figures revealed how rates vary across the area. Charity Mind said England is facing a mental health pandemic and called for a stronger government approach to tackle the widening inequalities in care. Analysis of NHS estimates the House of Commons library shows 12.1% of adult GP patients across Winchester had a diagnosis of depression in 2019-2020. This is a slightly higher rate than the 11.5% average across England. And out of Winchester's 14 areas, it was higher in Coldon Common and Twyford, where 14.5% were depressed. At the other end of the scale, New Alresford, where 9.3% of the patients were depressed. Mind said bereavement, isolation and the economic recession means the nation is now facing a mental health pandemic and that a strategic approach from the government is needed. Vicky Nash, head of policy and campaigns at the charity, said, "This strategy must focus specifically on communities disproportionately affected by pandemic, including racialized communities and young people. It must address widening inequalities, sort out our woefully underfunded social care system, fund public health, and make sure the education system supports young people's well-being." New figures from the Office of National Statistics show 1 in 5 adults experience depressive symptoms between January and March, more than double the year before.
Radical ideas for City Park. Civic chiefs are considering major changes at Winchester's main park. The City Council is mooting ideas for North Walls Park, such as a sculptor tower to be a new visitor attraction just north of the bowling green next to the River Itchen. It could include a helter-skelter or climbing wall. The Park Avenue entrance would be revamped with an outdoor area for events, seating, drinking fountain, water fountain for play, toilets and possible cafe or mobile coffee van. It would mean the paving over the current lawn between the bowling green and Park Avenue. More would be made of the entrance from Park Avenue, with possibly an arch or a totem pole. A public consultation on the future of North Walls Recreation Ground in Winchester has been launched. Residents are being asked their views on the plans prepared by a team of consultants, which sets out a number of ideas for improvements. The consultation is open until Friday, June the 11th. To view the park plan proposals and access the survey, go to the City Council's website. The City Council says the existing sports pitches would be retained and biodiversity of the park would be improved. A Friends of the Park organisation would be established to enhance and develop partnerships going forward. The council website says, "Great parks are made up of great places, with a diverse combination of things to do throughout the day and throughout all seasons. North Walls will be a great park, loved by a great city community, with all the things one would want from a modern park. Function and beauty, activity and quiet, exploration and play, landmarks and river context, sustainability and things that are unified yet diverse." The statement continued, "We are considering the park as a series of diverse and complementary outdoor rooms, which would form the basis for providing a whole host of focused activities, events and environments. An environmentally sustainable park will enable people to live active and healthy lifestyles, with biodiverse green spaces, learning and play, a clean river, a network of walking and cycle paths, and recycling initiatives. A new sculptural observation tower could be the park's new landmark. Sited towards the centre and offering spectacular views, it has the potential to become a symbol of improvements. There would be a new bridge near the rugby ground, improved paths, and the repainting of Banana Bridge yellow. All the northern end of the park, a new park canopy solar-powered shade structure could be built for enhancing the green space, creating a comfortable and cool space and reducing the park's energy footprint. The consultation has only just launched, but it is likely that many will see the proposals as too extreme. The future of the River Park Leisure Centre building is uncertain. Many people want to see the return of a Lido, an open-air outdoor swimming pool."
Royal unveiling for military site. A member of the royal family opened the new facilities at Worthy Down following a £300 million transformation. Her Royal Highness the Princess Royal unveiled the Defence College of Logistics, Policing and Administration and the Royal Logistics Corps Museum. Over the last few years, the site near Winchester has become a training centre for military logisticians, police officers and administrators from the Royal Navy, British Army and Royal Air Force. Relocating military functions and personnel from Princess Royal Barracks, HMS Raleigh and RAF Halton allows the easy sharing of expertise and facilities across all three services. The programme has seen the construction of 27 new buildings, including accommodation, teaching spaces, medical and dental centre, regimental headquarters and facilities for catering, retail and leisure, including sports pitches and a gym. Brigadier Caldicott, CBE, Commandant Defence College of Logistics, Policing and Administration, said, "The DCLPA is honoured that Her Royal Highness the Princess Royal has formally opened the DCLPA here at Worthy Down. The opening marks the culmination of Project Wellesley, which has seen all three services combine logistics, policing and administration training under one college. The project is a great example of effective cooperation between the military, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation and contractors for the benefit of the armed forces. The brilliant facilities here at Worthy Down are truly world class and have helped create a training centre of excellence that is second to none." Her Royal Highness the Princess Anne was shown around the site by Brigadier Caldicott and the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkins, Esquire. She signed the visitor's book, met VIPs and revealed a commemorative plaque. The Colonel Royal Logistics Corps and the Royal Logistics Corps Museum Trustee, Colonel John West, said, "The Corps is honoured that our Colonel-in-Chief, Her Royal Highness the Princess Royal, has agreed to be patron for the new Royal Logistics Corps Museum and has formally opened the museum in its new location today following months of hard work by the museum team. The museum opening sees the home of the Corps and our rich heritage firmly established at Worthy-Down alongside the Centre of Professional Logistic Excellence at the Defence College of Logistics, Policing and Administration. And there are a number of photographs showing the Princess Royal being given a tour of the new facilities and also meeting some of the staff, socially distanced, of course, and all wearing masks, and some examples of the uniforms, equipment and vehicles on display in the museum. So that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements and then Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So firstly, the death announcements. Bentley. Pauline Ada Bentley, formerly of Sleepers Hill, passed away in Cheshire on the 30th of April, aged 85. Courton. Janet Ann Courton died peacefully at Sunrise Senior Living, aged 85. Deneen. Nancy Margaret Deneen, née Carter, who died peacefully in Westmorland but was born in Winchester, aged 98. Lempriere, Shirley Lempriere, at home on the 13th of May. Shearer, James Keith Shearer, died suddenly following a heart attack on the 3rd of May, aged 65. Wagstaff, Luciana Wagstaff, died peacefully on the 7th of May, aged 90. Waller, Angela Waller, died peacefully in hospital on the 2nd of May. Whale, Christopher Whale, passed away on the 24th of April. And Williams, Dorothy Constance Williams, died peacefully at home following a long illness, aged 93. And now, Claire, I think you've got a Christian comment, please.
Fine. Today, this is headed, Thy Kingdom Come, and it's written by the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is rector of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. At St Faith's school, as at many schools, we still teach the children to pray with these words. This prayer is so familiar to us, but we should not take it for granted. It is not a small thing to call on God to rule as king. For God to rule as king, other forces have to give way. Many of us are seeking this at the moment. We want to rebalance our lives. Some people want to maintain a new balance, which has, despite all the pain and loss, been one good thing to emerge from times of lockdown. For the balance to be right, idols like success, wealth and popularity need to be deposed. We call these idols because they appear like all-powerful forces which should rule our lives. But they are not all-powerful, and we should not let them rule us. And then false messages about ourselves need to be silenced, that we are worthless, that our happiness depends on worldly things, that we must keep ourselves insecure. We are of infinite worth in God's sight. We need only look at any picture of Jesus on the cross to see what God is prepared to do to bring us back to him. Enjoy the good things of creation, God says, but do not suppose that your safety or peace depend on them. It is idols and false messages which enslave us. In our area, they often enslave us through our overwork, overactivity, and overconsumption. God's will for us to liberate us from all this, to find fullness of life in him. Thy kingdom come is a good prayer for this stage of the pandemic. It is also appropriate for those these 9 days between Ascension and Pentecost. Last week, we celebrated Ascension. How Jesus, after appearing to his disciples for 40 days after his resurrection, left them to ascend to glory to the right hand of the Father. On Sunday, we will celebrate the powerful coming of the Holy Spirit to the Christian community on the 50th day, Pentecost. To pray thy kingdom is to ask Jesus to direct our lives, as he directs the whole cosmos, which was created through him. It is to ask the Holy Spirit to inspire us to lives where God, not idols, rules. Lives which play their part in building the wider kingdom of justice and peace. The fruit of the Holy Spirit in our lives is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Which of these fruits do you most need in your life? Which fruits does our city and its surrounding villages need most? Do not be afraid to ask for more patience, more generosity, more gentleness. These are not things which come naturally to human beings all the time. Ask the Holy Spirit to renew you and the whole church. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, in our lives, our homes, our city and our nation, and make your church a sign of that coming kingdom. From the Reverend Philip Grinks.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Norma, please.
And this is from Mike Ellis of Bishop Sutton about Boomtown. Sir, the words offered by the female spokesman, "We can't imagine another summer without celebrating with our local community, etc., are, to put it frankly, patronising and inaccurate. Let us not lose sight of the fact that this event is a self-serving commercial enterprise benefiting only those who organise and are invested in the event. Let me assure the Boomtown spokesman that the surrounding communities are not gagging for the uninterrupted continuation of this frivolous festival, which causes delays of days of disruption to local travel, infrastructure, and attended by unacceptable environmental noise levels and criminal and unsociable behaviour." There you go. That's from Mike Ellis.
This letter is headed NHS No Shows. I have some sympathy with Simon Lever. His letter, Chronicle May 6, regarding missed appointments, deserves consideration. Although I do not agree with implementing fines, how would these be issued? Who would communicate? How would they be collected? It would be a bureaucratic nightmare. Constant repetition of the message about the cost is important, which will help reduce the number of no-shows. Pardon. However, there is a greater issue that I think he and everybody should be seriously concerned about. The future of the NHS, which is being systematically and stealthily privatised right under our noses. The implementation of integrated care organisations systems, as confirmed in the Queen's speech on the 11th of May 2021, is a direct import into this country from US Medicare providers and global insurance corporations such as the Centene, Optum and Cerner corporations. Centene have recently purchased 70 GP practices in the UK. NHS England is actively pursuing these commercial organisations, ready to make sweeping changes to our free, at the point of delivery, healthcare, to one to private purchase. The NHS we know and depend upon was described by American commentator and journalist Walter Cronkite as exceptionalism. He also described the US healthcare system as not health, not care, and not a system. 44 million adult Americans have no health insurance, and 38 million have inadequate cover. In 2015, STPS, that is Sustainability and Transformation Plans, were introduced by the NHS. Their footprints do not relate to geographical, constituency, or existing cultural boundaries. It is these that were to become integrated care systems by April 2021. The government has had ample opportunity through the pandemic to utilise prompt commercial relationships, awarding in excess of £11 billion in contracts without a shred of public scrutiny up to July 2020. In order to establish an ICS, hospital trusts will be required not to be in deficit by 2023/24, a very tall order. I would suggest that Simon's concern about missed appointments is considerably overshadowed by a deliberately secretive privatisation of the NHS. We must ensure this does not happen. And that's from Peter Rees, who's a member of the Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
This letter is headed Junction 9M3 from Kathleen Edwards at Chilbolton. So a notice of consultation appeared in the public notices section of last week's paper from Highways England on the proposed scheme comprising the following key elements. The widening of the M3 to form a four-lane motorway. Excuse me. Rearranging the main Junction 9 roundabout. Three new bridges and a number of other structures, including new underpasses, revised walking and cycling routes, new connecting roads from the revised roundabout, and improved motorway slip roads. The consultation will take place between Thursday, May the 27th and Thursday, July the 8th this year. The notice states that there will be no local places for public inspection of the consultation due to COVID-19. Although there will be a virtual exhibition. There will be bespoke online webinars, telephone surgery and details of how to get involved. The notice also states that a paper copy can be requested, or an electronic copy via a USB drive, by contacting Highways England. You can telephone 0300 123 5000 or you can apply by post to Free Post M3 Junction 9. The statement of community consultation will be made available free of charge, and I'm sure that many readers of the Chronicle will wish to be involved in the consultation. And that letter's from Kathleen Edwards, Test Rise, Chilbolton.
New police boss. Sir, your twin reports, Chronicle May the 13th, is about the new police commissioner's election and the break-in and theft at London Camera Exchange in the square exemplify what's wrong with our police today. You state, Conservative Donna Jones is the newly elected police and crime commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, thereby implying supervision of the police by a political party. This is wrong. The police service set up by the Prime Minister, Sir Robert Peel, in the 19th century belonged to we, the people, who allow it to police by consent. Few these days understand this concept. I suggest people do not belong to the government. as do the armed forces. That is why they do not carry arms on normal duty. Supervision used to be by a watch committee of the local citizens. Prime Minister Heath replaced them by the police authorities in the 1960s, which lent towards government control and was a mistake. In this context, the word authority was offensive to my opinion. Then came the police commissioner with its even closer political attachment to government control and a weak attempt to copy the American system. The turnout for the first two elections was very low. This new turnout was at 39.1%. Since the 1960s, police themselves have gradually withdrawn from the public sight, and contact on foot, on bicycle and mounted into four-wheeled steel boxes. They had regularly patrolled the city. They would probably have deterred the brazen break-in and theft. I hope Ms. Jones succeeds in her aim to increase policing in the streets. Introduction of mounted officers would help greatly to increase police profile. Their ability to cover a very extensive beat efficiently should not be underestimated. I conclude, the police belong to we, the people, and not to the government. And that was from Robert Barnes of Chilbolton Avenue in Winchester.
This letter from Ian Tate is headed Council Housing. Yet again, the Chronicle is publishing letters from well-meaning people who are worried about the future of Winchester within its wonderful setting. That's fine for those of us who are adequately housed, but as I have stated repeatedly over the last 15 or so years, Winchester has a chronic shortage of affordable and inclusive housing, and morally we have to resolve this crisis for those affected by the hugely high property prices and private rents. My solution would be to build a 21st century brand new council estate, and yes, the only deliverable option is to build on countryside. There are in fact quite a few potential sites. Bushfield Camp for a start, and then there's Sir John Moore's Barracks. If the City Council approached the landowner promoting Royal Down, there must be a deal to be done there too, or on the South Winchester Golf Course. Other alternatives are to extend Abbott's Barton towards Hebburnworthy on either side of the Worthy Road, or build on the land towards Three Maids Hill. Listening to wealthy residents trying to justify their own NIMBY position is extremely saddening to me, especially when so much of Winchester has been built even in my lifetime. When I knock doors, which I do very regularly, hardly anyone ever opposes the principle of delivering more affordable housing. It's only when they think it will spoil their view do they start to agitate. I have argued strongly that Winchester must debate affordable housing provision and find these sites upon which it can be built, and do it now. And that's from Ian Tate, Berwick Road, Week, Winchester.
And the last letter is headed, Bring in the Army to Tackle Pony Racing. Sir, read the Travellers Horse Races Returns to the A33, Mitchell Dever, Chronicle, the May the 13th. If the police cannot handle this, they should bring in the army. They are breaking the law. So what they're saying is anyone can do this and nothing will happen. So if all the bikers got together, they could do the same and there's nothing they can do. The chief inspector should resign if they cannot uphold the law. This is disgusting that the police are too scared to do anything. It's time they did their job. And that's from Richard Parfitt, Walpole Road, Stanmore, Winchester. And now we have the editorial comment, please.
And this is said, Leading the Lives of Quiet Depression. The 19th century American writer Henry David Thoreau said most people lead lives of quiet desperation. Our story today on page 31 about the levels of depression across the UK, including the Winchester district, would seem to bear that out. One in eight people has had clinical depression in the last year. Thoreau was perhaps overstating it, but it really is a major problem that does not get enough attention. Former Prime Minister David Cameron raised the issue when he was in Downing Street, talking about the index of happiness being a better yardstick for the national progress and the gross domestic product. We may be getting richer, with more of us having supposedly desirable possessions, yet more people feel their lives are empty. Although COVID has brought about people down initially, perhaps in the long run it will, like the Second World War, make people realise that we're all dependent on each other and community spirit will rise. Maybe the answer is for everyone to stop stressing about Silver Hill and traffic and just enjoy the sun on their face and the wind in their hair.
Thank you. And now we have first person, Claire, please.
This is by Joanna Lewis and is the closure of Moorside. The joys of lockdown ending. After 9 solid months, I've finally been able to meet my parents again. I hugged my frail father so tight, he started to change colour. His weight has gone one way, mine the other. It must have felt like being attacked by a well-upholstered sofa. At first, you notice the changes, sometimes worrying, in those you've not seen for so long, who have been through an ordeal. But quickly that fades, replaced by the comfort of familiarity. Some things will never change, like the order you sit around the table, with no words needed until asking of that eternal question, have you paid off that credit card yet? But end of lockdown also means some hard post-COVID reality checks for our elderly. None more starkly illustrated than the likely closure of Winchester's beloved Moorside, a flagship in loving care for dementia sufferers. All the touching letters in the Chronicle over the last weeks have shown how this decision has shocked, dismayed, and outraged the community. Dementia is on the increase. The isolation from the pandemic will increase it further. We have a chronic shortage in residential care for those afflicted. We were promised, the care sector was promised, it would be supported by the government after decades of neglect, and yet beloved Moorside is closing. It's dismaying for staff, it's dismaying for residents' families. The bond between staff and dementia patient is likely like no other. For they are like infants in their vulnerability, and with all care homes being sealed off, that sense of family has increased. I know this as an old friend now lives there. Known to many in the community from being the senior sister in charge of the RHCH accident and emergency for many years, no nonsense, she ran a tight ship, thinking nothing of jumping in a helicopter if needed to attend a serious incident. Now she is unrecognisable, and it is she who needs the most patient and compassionate care. Moorside gives her that unlike any other care home in Winchester. As the chair of the charity that runs it admits, Moorside provides great care because staffing levels and nursing input is higher than elsewhere, and it is higher because those levels are consistent with providing good care in the context of high needs dementia nursing care. Moorside should be the standard model held up as an example. It was built around the concept of family hubs, with separate, more intimate dining spaces, living rooms, and memory areas. Here's the rub, though. As a charity, it has to subsidise its patient income from its endowment that has been suffering. Being a charity, it has a limit on how many high-fee-paying residents it can accept. Plus, during the pandemic, he had to pay the costs of keeping the disease away from residents. So the trustees are forced to contemplate turning the home into a Packham and Stackham type, with many more rooms and residents, and the usual factory-like mega dining room. It should not be like this. Those who've gained from the pandemic should pay more for those who have lost out. How many more Porsche family cars do you see now on the road post-pandemic? 10 of these would pay for 1 year of Moorside's annual subsidy. Meanwhile, the charity's endowment has been hit by the decline in the high street as shops close. Online is not going away, but those who use Amazon should reflect on the price others pay for cheap and quick. It got away with zero corporation tax on sales of £38 billion last year. Money lost that could be going into our health system so that care homes like Moorside never have to close.
Thank you. Now we have two items on Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. The first one, a big prize for a little yak. A Stockbridge author's debut book has secured an esteemed literary prize, topping a six-strong shortlist. The Littlest Yak by Lou Fraser has won Oscar's book prize by award patron Her Royal Highness Princess Beatrice and secures a £1,000 prize. The Littlest Yak, a joyous rhyming caper that teaches little ones to celebrate their own unique talents, follows the journey of Gertie, the littlest yak in the whole herd. Feeling like she's stuck in her smallness, bursting to grow up big and tall, Gertie soon learns there are things only she can do, and her smallness can do something big after all. Lou draws on everyday inspiration for her stories. Writing from a shed in her garden, she revealed that the character of Gertie came to life as she spent time with her daughter. Lou said, "This story means a huge amount to me. I put my heart into it as it felt like a really important message to remind children and grown-ups that we all have bigness inside. It's the most tremendous honour, and I can't thank the judges enough for choosing our book to be the winner of Oscar's Book Prize 2021. Her Royal Highness Princess Beatrice, the award's patron since 2017, said, "This is a beautiful book, and the winners should be so proud of everything they've achieved." The second item, court said, "Small is beautiful at the close." And it's accompanied by a photograph of a fire and rescue tender emerging from the St Swithin Street entrance to the close. Now, I suspect that you could barely get a cigarette packet all the way around it. It is an extremely tight fit through there. And as the text says, in recent years, fire engines have been getting bigger. But the new one at Winchester Fire Station is slightly smaller, and that will be an advantage if it ever has to tackle a fire at the cathedral. Larger engines meant that kit had to be removed to allow it under the medieval gateway. The fire station tweeted, "Think thin. Best to check that P6 goes through our lowest, thinnest arch in Winchester before we ever have to do it in anger. No more stopping, removing ladder, driving through, then restowing the ladder. Our newest addition fits straight through." The cathedral is the largest historic building in the Winchester fireground, and with Fawley Oil Refinery, is said to be the only emergency that necessitates the waking of the chief fire officer at any time of the night. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 21st of May at 5:08 a.m. and begins at 8:57 p.m. And next Wednesday the 26th of May, it ends at 5:02 a.m. and begins at 9:03 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number on the key fob that's attached to the memory stick. We continue with further items of general news. Norma.
The oldest door at the cathedral. Winchester Cathedral has turned the attention of its online following to the oldest door in the building. This door is more than 800 years old, and according to recent blog entry by the team at the church, those visiting the Kings and Scribes exhibition will pass through and should look out for the green colour with ornate iron hinges. The online entry reads, "In the wall beside the door is a space for a locking bar and a squint, a peephole, so that the monks could inspect visitors before letting them into the priory. Cromwell's troops did a good job of demolishing the priory buildings once attached to the cathedral, but luckily they left this door. What stories could it tell of war and peace and past pandemics, or the people who have passed through it? Despite being over 800 years old, it still fits like a glove and is opened every day to welcome visitors into the exhibition, where significantly the Winchester Bible is displayed, which may have been written and illustrated in the very rooms to which the door leads. The Kings and Scribes exhibition has reopened following the easing of indoor social distancing restrictions. It marks the culmination of an ambitious 7-year project to unlock the cathedral's stories and treasures by inspiring active engagement in the interpretation and exploration of our heritage. There are 4 galleries available: A Scribe's Tale, The Birth of a Nation, Decoding the Stones, and The Mezzanine. And there's a picture of this magnificent door, and it is green and it has an oval top and has the most amazing intricate brasswork on the door. So if you ever go to the cathedral, do take a look at it. It looks absolutely wonderful.
Well, this is another Winchester Cathedral story. The peregrine chicks are ringed. The 3 peregrine falcon chicks, which hatched at Winchester Cathedral, have been ringed. The 2 females and 1 male were ringed on Friday morning by members of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, who were given special access to the nesting site so that they could give each chick an identification ring as well as weigh and measure them. As in previous years, placing special identification rings on the legs of the chicks will allow their future lives to be tracked so that information can be collected on their movements and behaviours. Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, said, "This is our one chance to check that the chicks are doing well and to give them individual leg rings, which enables us to receive information about their future travels. This is how we know that one of the 2019 chicks is alive and well in Romsey, while those from other nests have travelled to neighbouring counties and as far as Holland. Everything is done under a government licence and the birds are not hurt in any way. Winnie and Chester are great parents, so they will go back to their chicks once the brief visit is over." Following the work of Keith and the Hampshire Ornithological Society, a male peregrine identified as one of the chicks that hatched at Winchester Cathedral in 2019 was recorded at St Andrew's Church in Farnham and is now known to be regularly visiting Romsey Abbey. there is increased evidence that peregrines born at a particular type of nest site will go back to something similar when they're ready to breed. Now that the chicks have been ringed, they will spend another month or more around the cathedral, learning how to be independent before going their own way.
Pupils between 12 and 13 pass uni-level test. 12 lucky youngsters at the Henry Beaufort School embarked on a scholars programme. The scheme is delivered by The Brilliant Club, a charity which aims to widen access at top universities for outstanding pupils in non-selective state schools. Pupils from Year 8 underwent a rigorous process in the spring term, attending multiple tutorials led by PhD tutors. The learning was based around the French Revolution and were all at a very high level. All 12 students produced a final assessment, which was a 1,500-word essay, and all passed with the following grades: 2 firsts, 2 two-ones, 4 two-twos, and 2 thirds. Headteacher Sue Hurl said, "Having read all of the essays, I'm in awe of the work that our young people in Year 8 have produced. It's a delight to see them explore the complexities of the factors impacting on the French Revolution, demonstrating their in-depth thinking and ability to articulate a response to university standards. I'm very proud of them all." And there's a picture of the students. Well, it says 8, but there's only 7 in the picture. All holding up their certificates from the Brilliant Club. It's a job to see if they're smiling, because, of course, they've all got masks on.
Businesses open up for the first time this year. Many businesses in Winchester rejoiced at reopening, while others welcome customers indoors for the first time since December. Leisure facilities such as museums, cinemas, theatres and bowling alleys were given the green light to open on Monday under the government's roadmap out of lockdown. Despite hospitality businesses being able to accept customers outside, for some venues it was the first time that they had opened their doors since Christmas. One of those was St James's Tavern on Romsey Road. General Manager Martin Hutton said, "It's like a bandage has been lifted. Pubs are support networks. They're not just dispensaries of alcohol. It's where you meet people. It's like a breath of fresh air to be open." Regulars were also eager to get back into the pub, with Simon Wilson and his wife Ulrika one of the first customers through the door. Simon said, "This is our favourite hangout when it is open. We thought midday on opening day, let's make the most of it. There has been a lot of work in lockdown, so it's a treat for us today." Also welcoming back diners and drinkers for the first time this year was the William Walker in the square. Manager Danny Parker told the Chronicle, "It's so amazing to be open. It's been a long time coming. We're just really happy to be open today." Danny added, "As the team, we have been quite happy to wait and know that this will be the last time we will reopen, rather than opening and then having to close 3 times. The pub is already fully booked for Friday and Saturday." It seems that the cafe lunches are also missed by the visitors to Winchester, as places were full and regulars had returned. Lee Toswell, manager of Coco, said, "It's lovely. It's nice to hear people talking and engaging with customers. It just gives it a better atmosphere inside. A lot of regulars that come in on their own, it's nice for them to have someone to talk to, having no one to talk to at home." Winchester Cathedral has also opened to visitors once again. The cathedral is now open to visitors from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Saturday and 12 to 3 p.m. on Sunday. Guided tours have resumed, socially distanced and in smaller groups, 6 people or 2 households, and the King and Scribes Birth of the Nation exhibition is also open to the public. Hampshire Cultural Trust, which runs the Winchester City Museum and the Westgate Museums, also opened on Monday. A post on its website said, "Great days out are back. Our museums, galleries and art centres are opening from the 17th of May and we can't wait to give you a warm and safe welcome." Other changes also took place on Monday under the government's easing of lockdown. Visit to the homes of friends and families are able to resume and foreign holiday ban has ended. Hugs and other physical contact between households are also permitted for the first time since the restrictions began more than a year ago. And there are six photographs. The first one is of Simon Wilson and his wife Ulrika at St James's Tavern, sitting at a table with their coffee cups. Then there's William Walker manager Danny Parker standing behind the bar with her mask on. There is the St James Tavern deputy manager Ben Woolas and manager Martin Hutton also behind the bar with their masks on. And the manager of Choco, Lee Toswell, is there grinning away. And outside the William Walker, there's a notice saying, "Indoor seating now open, welcome back." And there's also a picture of the visitors back inside Winchester Cathedral.
Fraudsters convicted of £2 million con. Two fraudsters have been convicted of conning vulnerable victims out of a £2 million fraud in a boiler room fraud. Luke Ryan, 33, and Paul Seekins, 60, were found guilty at the specialist court in Southwark on Wednesday on charges of running a business for fraudulent purposes. Seekins was also convicted of money laundering and proceeds of crime charges. Seekins and Ryan were directors of Enviro Associates, a company based in Southgate Street, Winchester, that used high-pressure sales tactics to convince vulnerable people to buy voluntary emission reduction, VERs, carbon credits. They used call operatives, making false claims about returns. Individuals were sold these VERs on the basis they were good and promising investments. But in reality, there was no market for investors to sell them on and no realistic likelihood of there ever being one. They were purchased via Seekins' London-based company, CNI, for very small sums and then sold by the boiler rooms. These are call centres for con artists, to victims at vastly inflated prices, sometimes up to a 1,000% markup. The money from the victims was paid directly to the bank accounts of three London-based clearing companies, CNI, Token and Opus, all controlled by Seekins, that deducted a commission and then paid the monies back to the boiler rooms. Total losses amounted to £1,847,630.94. But this is believed to be a large underestimate of the total scales of the fraud, as financial analysis of bank statements showed well in excess of £30 million went through various company accounts controlled by Seekins. Ryan, who is 33, Scott Road, Eastleigh, was convicted of one count of fraudulent trading, and Seekins, who is 60, from White Webb's Farm, Enfield, London, was found guilty of three counts of money laundering and one of fraudulent trading. They are due to be sentenced on May 28th at Southwark Crown Court. Their convictions follow an 8-year investigation by the City of London and Hampshire forces.
A third given full vaccine in this district. More than a third of people in Winchester have received 2 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine, figures reveal. NHS data shows 36,127 people have received both jabs by May the 9th. That's 36% of those aged 16 and over. Of those to have received both jabs, 32,119 were aged 40 and over. But it means 4,008 people aged between 16 and 39 have received both doses. The NHS vaccine data also reveals variation in coverage for residents who have received at least one dose between different areas across Winchester. Across Winchester, 71% of those aged 16 and over have had one jab, according to the latest available figures. And the areas with the highest coverage are Bishops Waltham and Waltham Chase, Swanmore, Hambledon and West Meon, and Alresford. And the areas with the lowest coverage are Winchester Stanmore, Winchester East, and Winchester Central and South. Across England, 15 million people had received a second dose of the jab by May the 9th, 33% of the population aged 16 and over. That includes 13.3 million people aged 40 and over. And in total, 29.4 million people had received at least one dose of a vaccine by the same date, covering 65% of people over 16. It comes as people aged 36 and over yesterday began to be invited to receive their first coronavirus vaccine jab, NHS England confirmed. People will receive text messages inviting them for their vaccine as the rollout gathers pace. Along with 37-year-olds who began receiving invites from Tuesday, it means more than 1 million more people will be made eligible. Matt Hancock told the Commons, "The data suggests the vaccine has already saved over 12,000 lives and prevented over 33,000 people from being hospitalised."
Fears over proposals for concrete crusher. A racehorse trainer is fearing for the future of his business over plans for a concrete crusher. Chris Gordon, based at Morestead, said he wanted to die at the yard he'd been operating from since 2007. But a man named only as Mr. Fowler has submitted plans for a concrete crusher at Unit 3 Morestead Farm, just a stone's throw from Mr. Gordon's paddock. If the application is approved, the trainer would be forced to sell his land and move. "This is a massive thing for us," said Mr. Gordon. "Concrete crushers and racehorses simply do not go together. The stables here were made from reclaimed materials just after World War I, and the horses had been trained here for more than 65 years. When I looked to set up my business, I moved here to the South Downs because of the location. It is lovely, healthy and a quiet environment. The small industrial estate next door has been as quiet as an industrial estate could ever be, so it's never been a bother. But if this crusher is approved, it would open up a whole can of worms and ruin us as a business." In 2007, Mr. Gordon had room for just 4 horses. Now he trains 60 at a time and employs 20 people. He continued, "Most of the horses here are owned by people outside of Winchester, but they use us because they love the area and often stay in the city. I'm not sure they would feel the same if a huge concrete crusher was installed." Mr. Gordon also said that the residents of the village are worried about their health. He said that the concrete dust is abhorrent for humans and animals, and that one elderly neighbour already suffers from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, which caused breathing problems. The planning application can be viewed on the South Downs National Park website. So far, 12 people have publicly objected. Richard Corbett of Holden Farm, Holden Lane, Cheriton, said, "The proposed concrete crushing facility would be totally out of place in Morestead. The noise and pollution would ruin the quiet enjoyment of the footpath that runs from Hasley Down to Winchester, from where one can often see wild birds, typically in the downland landscape." And there's a picture of Chris and his wife Jenny on horses Tom and Jerry next to the boundary wall of the proposed concrete crusher. And there's sort of, you can see that there's a lovely open view behind them, which obviously would be obscured.
Tributes paid to hospice champion. Family and friends are mourning the loss of the amazing and inspirational man who was a driving force behind Winchester Hospice's fundraising campaign. Mike Bridge died on April the 26th at his Winchester home after a battle with cancer, one where his positivity and determination shone through as he defied the odds and made the most of every day. Mike, who was 59, was a Winchester Hospice ambassador and was one of the champions of the fundraising campaign to convert Burrell House on the Royal Hampshire County Hospital site in Winchester into a 10-bed hospice. Those who knew him have said that he was the heartbeat I Love Winchester Hospice, which was an online auction and entertaining event in February and raised more than Mike's target of £25,000. Paying tribute to her husband, Mike's wife Dawn said, "Mike was a loving husband, father, friend and colleague who will be missed very much by everyone who knew him. Mike was a larger-than-life character who loved life and he grabbed it with both hands. He was also always so positive and was such a can-do person. He was full of fun and one of those people who once you met him, he was never forgotten. He and Dawn loved making a family home in Winchester, where they and their three children, Sophie, Sam and James, have lived there for more than 20 years. Dawn continued, "Mike loved being a dad, and while he always worked long hours, he enjoyed the family time that he had at weekends and on holidays." She added, "When he was diagnosed with esophageal cancer, he was determined to fight it, and he did. And when he got involved in the Winchester Hospice campaign, he wanted to do everything he could to help and support it. He thoroughly enjoyed getting involved and wanted to make a difference. A keen Arsenal fan, Mike loves sport, and he was one of the key figures behind the Winchester Hospice annual charity golf day. Mike also made a moving and memorable contribution in a promotional film which raised greater awareness of and funds for the Winchester Hospice fundraising campaign. Knowing for being meticulous, Mike planned every detail of his funeral, which will take place on Friday, May the 21st at Chesil House. Also typical of his kindness and generosity, he has asked for any donations to be given to Winchester Hospice fundraising charity through https://mikebridge.muchloved.com/. Paying tribute to Mike, Nick Vaughan, chair of Winchester Hospice fundraising charity, said, "He has left a legacy by making such a difference to the campaign to create the hospice. While everyone is deeply sad that he will not be here to see it open this year, he will be with us in spirit and in our thoughts." And with this article, there's a picture of him and other members of the I Love Winchester Hospice fundraising team, which included his daughter, Sophie, her boyfriend, Elliot Bailey, and Winchester Hospice fundraising charity team members, Mark Jones and Sabrina Marsden.
centenary of the Royal British Legion. The 100th anniversary of the founding of the Royal British Legion was commemorated in Alresford by a small wreath-laying ceremony at the War Memorial in the grounds of St John's Church. As Alresford no longer has an active branch of the Legion, the ceremony was attended by representatives of the other armed forces organisations. The attendees were from the Royal Air Forces Association, Derek Sweetenham, the chairman, Alan Langford, standard-bearer, Air Commodore Keith Monkhouse, the president, Peter Colquhoun, Padre, and George Scott. From the Royal Naval Association, David Otley, chairman, and the Royal British Legion was represented by the local fundraising organiser, Sue Cox. A short prayer was followed by the last post, a silence, and the reveille. This was played by George Scammon, and wreaths were laid on behalf of the three organisations. And there's a picture of the those commemorating it standing in front of the War Memorial and holding three wreaths about to be laid.
Residents back petition against recycling plant pans. More than 1,000 devastated Winchester residents have signed a petition against plans to double the operation of a recycling plant in Kingsworthy. EcoGen Recycling Limited has proposed to double the number of HGV movements it is allowed each day to 80, and to import 60,000 tonnes of waste each year. To increase its operation, the company has asked Hampshire County Council to alter planning conditions from 2019 as it's approaching the operating limits imposed. But the application has drawn criticism from those living in the village and the surrounding areas, with 1,006 signing a petition calling on the County Council to refuse the proposal. The petition, set up by resident Steve Waters, was handed into the council on Friday last week. In a submission to the authority, the signatories have said, local residents are devastated to find that EcoGen is planning to expand and double the 40 heavy goods vehicles that use Loveton Lane and Stoke Charity Road to 80 a day. This is a quiet residential country lane with a high number of cyclists, pedestrians and children using it on a daily basis. It has already become dangerous to walk on footpaths, with HGVs mounting the pavement to pass each other and travelling at speeds which are totally unacceptable for the road conditions. Residents have been given support of Councillor Jackie Porter, Council Member for Itchen Valley and Winchester City Councillor for the Worthies, Steve Cramerson. Councillor Cramerson said, Jackie and I have been listening to residents and users of Loveton Lane and Stoke Charity Road for some months. They are really concerned about the safety of all the users of the routes and the impact on residents who live on the route, even with the current level of HGVs. We have asked residents concerned about the planning application to write in response to the HCC Planning Department, and many have. Doubling the number of HGVs is just unacceptable. Councillor Porter said, we are thankful to Steve Waters for setting up the petition and raising awareness of the application with us in Kingsworthy. We know that Stoke Charity residents are rejecting too. We are united in opposition to this planning application. An increase in the HGVs on this route would be a significant increase in risks to other road users, with even more noise, dust, road safety issues and damage to the road. And there are two photographs. There's the main one that has Steve and Dennis Waters with Councillor Jackie Porter and Steve Cramerson holding up a banner that says, say no to 80 HGV trips a day. And also the two ladies are holding up over 1,000 residents of Kingsworthy say no to EcoGen's new planning application. And below that, there is a picture of three very big HGVs in a very small lane. One of them is right across one of the pavements.
This is about a green tiger beetle. I must admit I've never seen one. And the college successfully breeds a rare beetles. A captive breeding project run in partnership with the Winchester College has successfully bred green tiger beetles. The species, also known as Cincindella campestris, are large, striking beetles that are easily identified by their iridescent green colouring and characteristic yellow spots. They are relatively widespread in the UK and can be found in the spring and early summer. They are closely related to the heath tiger beetle, Cincindella sylvatica, a species which is now extremely rare in the UK and found in only a handful of places in the south of England. Sadly, heath tiger beetles have experienced a dramatic decline over the last few decades, with the loss and degradation of lowland heathland. To try to reverse this trend, the Species Recovery Trust and Sparshot College have set up a captive breeding project. The ultimate aim is to reintroduce beetles to suitable sites in England. Excuse me. Emma Lawler, zookeeper at Sparshot College, said, "I have been a part of this project from the start, so I'm really excited to see the emergence of the larvae again, after they buried down for autumn and winter to escape the adverse weather. For all of them to have survived their first year is fantastic news. The knowledge gained from rearing these beetles successfully can be used to help us to raise the rarer species of tiger beetles in the future. So our work here in Sparshot College is invaluable."
Campaign for 30 miles an hour in village. Campaigners are calling for the speed limit on the road that runs through Abbotsworthy to be lowered following long-standing concerns about road safety in the area. Residents have been urging Hampshire County Council to reduce the speed limit on the B3047 through the village from 40 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour for several years. They've now stepped up their campaign following a crash involving two vehicles last December, in which a Land Rover hit the wall of a Grade 2 listed cottage, causing major structural damage and the cottage requiring a rebuild. The car was going 40 miles an hour. The collision took place on the junction of Mill Lane and Park Lane, which residents say can only be made safer by reducing the speed limit. Frank Abbott, who lives near the junction, said, "Because it wasn't an injury accident, and because there haven't been other injury accidents, the County Council say it has a good safety record, which is complete nonsense. You only have to stand at the junction to see how dangerous it is." Mr. Abbott continued, "It's inherently dangerous. It's a blind junction both ways, so there's very little time for most on the B3047 to react if they come to a hazard. We cannot change the junction. The only way we can make it safer is by making it 30. Another resident behind the campaign is Juliet Howland. She said, "Quite a few years ago, Itchen Valley went down to 30 miles an hour, and Abbotsworthy didn't. No one could understand why." A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "We're well aware of residents' views about speed limits on the B3047 through Abbotsworthy, but this road has a relatively good safety record, and based on current evidence, would not be a priority for safety measures compared with other locations in Hampshire. We have informed residents that we intend to carry out a traffic survey to ensure our evidence base is up to date here. A survey will be arranged once traffic flows return more to normal patterns."
100 Men's Hall tea rooms reopen. Since March 2020, the tea room at the Hospital of St Cross has been closed to visitors. But thanks to a generous grant from the Friends of St Cross, the hall has been carefully renovated during the closure. The work was planned and overseen by Louise Branbridge of Seymour and Bainbridge Architects and carried out by the hospital staff and specialist contractors. The picture shows John Pringle, chairman of the Friends, cutting the reopening ribbon with the Master of St Cross, Reverend Terry Hemmings, Jonathan Cook, Chairman of the Trustees of the Hospital of St Cross, and Janet Rowland-White, the HMH Coordinator. The 100 Men's Hall Tea Room is open Monday to Saturday, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. and 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. Sundays, 2:30 to 4:40. The Hospital Porter's Lodge, shop and gardens only are now open to visitors Monday to Saturday, 9:30 to 5, and on Sunday from 1 to 5 p.m. It is hoped that visitors will be able to visit the hospital buildings, including the impressive St Cross Chapel, if restrictions are further eased on June the 21st. And there were three pictures, one of the Hospital of St Cross, a recent presentation of a new flag, and the aforesaid people cutting the ribbon outside the tea room.
Garage Scoop's prestigious award. Snow's Volvo Winchester has scooped a regional accolade in the company's retailer and approved body shop High Achiever Recognition Awards. Alongside Snow's Accident Repair Centre, SARC, the garage in London Road, Kingsworthy, was recognised for its recent work. Nominees were scored throughout 2020 on a range of different criteria, including performance and the strength of their local working relationships. A winners' event will take place in Burton-upon-Trent in June and will bring together the best of the country from each of the eight regions, with an overall winner announced on the night. Steve Plunkett, Volvo Body and Paint Development Manager, said, "Competition was fierce throughout the year, with Snow's Volvo and Snow's Accident Repair Centre battling it out with other top contenders before finishing top in their region. We look forward to presenting them with their regional award very soon. It is vitally important that we recognise the valuable work being carried out by our network's retailer and body shop partners, all of which are extremely valuable assets to our brand. Their hard work and dedication ensures a Volvo vehicle undergoing repairs meets our exacting standards. They are also crucial in helping us maintain the brand's reputation for safety and service." Snow's Volvo General Manager Mark Austin added, "We are delighted that Snow's Volvo Winchester and Snow's Accident Repair Centre have both been recognised in this way. The award reflects both companies' dedication to the Volvo brand and the close working partnership that we have developed. Snow's Volvo is a one-stop dealership for an extensive range of new and manufacturer-approved used models from the Swedish car manufacturing giant. The dealership has hatchbacks, saloons and SUVs available."
Roof Clean makes for fantastic photos. Spring cleaning has been taken to new heights at Winchester Science Centre. The centre at Morne Hill near Winchester boasts a landmark 64-foot-tall pyramid roof, which calls for specialist cleaners. Absailers from Portsmouth-based SSH Cleaning with pressure washers have been cleaning the roof. Inside, the centre has been undertaking a spring clean in preparation for opening to the public on May the 22nd after a five-month closure. Ben Ward, chief executive of the centre, said, "We're doing a huge spring clean to get ready to reopen. Our inspirers have prepared some amazing new live science. Our maintenance team have powered up the interactive exhibits, and we've given everything inside a good old spring clean, so we couldn't forget the outside." The Science Centre reopens with a brand new free live science show called Sound Detectives. Super sleuths in training and their families can dig into the facts about how sound is created in nature through exciting demos and fun audience participation. And spaces can be booked in advance online. And they're right. They are fantastic photographs. There's four photographs showing the cleaners roped to the roof. It's a very steep, sloped pyramid side. And they're roped on, carrying a pressure washer. And you can see the difference where they've cleaned one half of the roof and not the other. But a fantastic photograph.
Alcohol licences agreed for cafes. Excuse me. Two Winchester cafes can now sell alcohol despite desperate pleas from nearby residents. Coffee Lab had sparked anger with its request for new licensing permissions, which also sought the ability to host live music. The plans for both the company's Little Minster Street and the Square premises were discussed thoroughly at a City Council subcommittee after hearing from objectors. Elizabeth Vaughan of King's Head Yard, a neighbour of the Little Minster Street Cafe, said, "This will be extremely disturbing for local residents. Coffee Lab has doubled in size during lockdown, and it would be fine if it was just selling coffee. I'm so stressed about these plans to sell alcohol and have already had a breakdown about it all. I'm looking after my husband and will not be able to do it properly if this is approved. The building is not designed for entertainment purposes, and any kind of noise leaks through into our properties." Ward Councillor Linda Murphy also objected. Andrew Vaughan, another public speaker, added, "The local residents already have it hard here. There is already a lot of drug use in the King's Head Yard area, and encouraging late-night alcohol drinking will only worsen antisocial behaviour. If the cafe wanted to sell a couple of beers every now and again, I'd understand, but I simply don't believe it. They had parties there before. As well as live music, they want to play background music too, and this will be heard by the neighbours. There is no other nighttime economy in this area. The Little Minster Street site was for many years before demolition and development a pub called Minstrels, and the premises is yards from the back of the Slug and Lettuce and the Vine pubs. The subcommittee saw no legal reason not to grant the new permissions. The Square premises can now host live music and play recorded songs on Monday to Sunday between 6 p.m. and 11 p.m. while selling alcohol between 9 a.m. and 10 p.m. Conditions have been imposed on the Little Minster Street venue, which can play recorded music from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and sell alcohol between the same times, Monday to Sunday. The applicant withdrew its request to host live music at this site and must also prevent customers from smoking outside the premises. Councillor Brian Lamming, who chaired the committee, said it was unusual for a coffee shop to apply for an alcohol licence and expressed concern that it could become a wine bar or a music venue. But Cliff Morris, representing Coffee Lab, said, "Live music is not currently in the business plan of my client, but it's easier to put everything in one licensing application." He added, "The building has had a premises license before for around 3 or 4 years. I believe it was a pizza restaurant. The alcohol permissions were taken away when Coffee Lab took over. The reason for the application is that sometimes people join their friends and do not want a coffee, but beer or wine instead. It's not in the business model to become a sort of niche pub. The business just wants to supply its clientele with its needs."
New commissioner sets out ambitions. The newly elected Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, for Hampshire has warned of a spike in alcohol-related crime as lockdown eases. Donna Jones, who was elected to the role in this month's election, met with the County Forces Chief Constable, Olivia Pinckney, in Winchester for their first official meeting. Ms. Jones, who stood as a Conservative candidate, said, "With pubs opening and people celebrating their complete freedom again, I think it's inevitable there could be a spike in drink and alcohol-related crimes. So it's going to be a busy summer for Hampshire Police. but we are very well rated in the indices about keeping people safe, and we all want crime to come down. And I believe we have the right vision and drive to make this one of the safest places to live in the country. She added, there has been a lot going on with COVID, and I would like to say thank you to the officers of Hampshire Constabulary, who I think have done an excellent job. Describing her ambition for the role, she said, I'm going to be someone who is going to make sure police visibility increases. There are more police officers on our streets, and ultimately, what we all want is for crime to come down. Ms. Jones said that she was absolutely committed to recruiting extra officers, with a target of 600 for the county, to be funded through increased Home Office funding and through efficiencies. Following the general election pledge in 2019, the Prime Minister promised 20,000 extra police officers across the country. We know in Hampshire that this is likely to be around 550, but also through securing additional funds and working with the Chief Constable, I want to see if we can find greater efficiencies, because 600 is the golden number. Ms. Jones added that she would be seeking to recruit more officers with an ethnic minority background, after a report showed there were only 3 black officers, 6 Asian, and 7 of mixed ethnicity out of 445 people who joined the force in the past year. She said, I know the Chief Constable is very focused on making sure the new recruits do represent the community, and I know we have done very well in Asian officer recruitment, and there has been more of a challenge in recruiting from the black community. And there's a picture of the Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones and Chief Constable Oliver Pickney walking along the High Street in Winchester.
Reflecting the pandemic. In celebration of this year's International Nurses Day, Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust has unveiled a piece of artwork painted by a nurse at the Trust who turned to painting during the coronavirus pandemic and produced a piece to reflect their experience. When COVID-19 hit, staff nurse and budding artist Laura Gosh was redeployed to the intensive care unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Laura spent 10 weeks being supported by the ICU team during her redeployment before returning to the treatment centre. Sarah Gold, clinical matron at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, had previously seen some of Laura's artwork and approached her to paint a piece for the ward that reflected the last year, for it to be displayed in the treatment centre at the Hampshire County Hospital. Laura said, I've been very grateful for the support I've had during my time in ICU, and I was really delighted when Sarah asked me to create a painting for the ward. The first things that came to mind were the waves, which to me represented the rise and fall of the pandemic, and rainbows, which became the symbol of support for the NHS. I feel very honoured to have been asked to take on this project, and I'm really pleased the final untitled piece has been chosen by the treatment centre's team. Laura has also created another painting that was gifted as a surprise to the chairman of Hampshire Hospitals, Steve Erskine. And there's a delightful picture of Steve Erskine, the chairman, alongside the painting with Laura. And the painting is, it's almost like an arch, 2 waves clashing together at the top. One with the striped rainbow effect of the support for nursing, and the other just a plain wave, but the 2 waves in opposite direction clashing at the top. Beautiful painting, very nicely painted.
Fundraiser for biker's family after fatal crash. Thousands of pounds have been raised to help pay for the funeral of motorcyclist who died following a serious condition. Jamie Pinnock from Winchester died on Wednesday after suffering life-threatening injuries in a collision which took place on the B2177 on Saturday, May the 1st. The 33-year-old was riding a blue Kawasaki ZR750 motorcycle when the incident occurred. He was taken to Southampton General Hospital, where he was in a critical state. Following his death, a fundraising page has been set up to help pay for his funeral and to raise money for the Southampton ICU, where he was being treated. Funds are also being raised for Jamie's 10-month-old son to help with his future. Georgie Gerard, who witnessed the collision and assisted police with their inquiries, wanted to do more to help his family and started the page, which has raised more than £7,000 at the time of writing. She said on the page, "Jamie was involved in a serious incident whilst on his motorbike. After witnessing this horrendous incident and giving a statement to the police, I felt completely helpless, so asked his family for permission to set up this to help him when he came out of hospital. Sadly, he passed away on the 12th of the 5th, 2021, leaving behind his loving family and friends. Nobody expects to be arranging a funeral for a 33-year-old. I want to raise as much money as possible to get him the best send-off and for his family not to have to worry about money to cover it. Excuse me. Any extra will be donated to Southampton ICU, who worked so hard and supported them at such a tough time. A share, £1 or £10, it doesn't matter. It all helps. Thank you so much." Jamie's family have said that they are still processing what happened and are deeply saddened. His mother said, "We are overwhelmed with gratitude at everyone's kindness." Tributes have also been paid on the fundraising page from those who knew him and from strangers. And there's a picture of Jamie Pinnock. Very nice, good-looking man. What a sad time for his family.
And after that rather sad piece, that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation team. And, of course, thanks to our readers, Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Claire Porter.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.